call the meeting to order. This is the Lazard Sands Outdoor Heritage Council meeting on August 1st. Yes, we're dealing with someone. The first thing is to review and approve the agenda. Are there any changes? Sue, do you have something you want to add to the agenda?
Yeah, how do I do that?
You suggest that you'd like to add something, maybe...
Probably be down by 9. Or it could be part of 9.
It relates, but we're not going to resolve anything today, so it's really probably a 10 or 11, but...
Okay.
Because nothing we can...
Well, yeah, you're just asking a question. Okay, I would ask that as a new 11 or a 10 and a half, I have an issue that I'd like to bring up, asking for a legal opinion.
All right. Have an objection to that? Is there a motion to approve the agenda with that addition? Yes?
I'd like a point of clarification on number 5. No, 6, please.
Okay, what point would you like to clarify?
On the point where it says that council has asked MAD to facilitate the consideration. I don't know if that's a substantive issue or not, but I don't recall council acting on it.
Okay. Bill, do you want to respond?
Yeah, I think having checked the record, and what we did was on the 4th of June indicate that as staff we would be working with MAD and would be back to the council with more information in the future. This is back to the council. So the question is this right for a decision by the council? And you want to make it a decision item, I think that's the thing to do.
So change it from update to action?
I think so.
Okay.
And we'll have a discussion on it at that point.
Right.
Okay.
Is number 7 the same, Bill?
I think we might as well treat it that way.
So, number 6 and 7 we came from update to action. Is there a motion to approve the agenda with the 3?
So
moved. Is there any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Great. Members, if you want to report any conflicts of interest, we have your agenda item 3, 4 conflicts that were identified with conflict forms. Mine didn't get sent in. I would say that I have a conflict with National Audubon Society as well as the Conservation Partners Program because I'm on the board of a group that received funding in the past from them, so for any appearance, I'd like to declare a conflict for those 2, which would be added to this list. It's my intention going forward to just pass out the list at each meeting and ask if there are any additions rather than go through every time who's got a conflict thing. Ron, you and I talked a little bit about your conflict, and you identified that you're a property owner in the Leech Lake Watershed District and have a sense of conflict. Do you feel at this point that your conflict should keep you from participating or just letting everyone know?
Well, not really understanding the conflict of interest law to begin with, which is very vague. I'm very willing to not participate, just to prevent any Mickey Mouse. The watershed has nothing to do with my property directly, except if it improves the water quality, hopefully it will improve the water quality in my lake. So that's the conflict.
Okay. So you'll change yours from not participate from fully participate to not participate.
Yeah, because of
just to make sure it's clean. And
yeah.
Great.
I have confidence in my fellow council members to do the right thing.
Thank you.
Are there any other conflicts that were not disclosed that someone would like to add to this list? Okay. Thank you all. Next, review and approve the minutes of both June 4th and July 9th. If someone would make a motion to approve both of those, that would be great.
So moved.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We're going to get Denny on the call.
This is Denny. Good morning.
Good morning, Denny. We're at agenda item 5 on our agenda, executive director's report. So, Bill, I'll turn this over to you.
There are two things I want to take care of with the executive director's report and then stand for general questions. One is just an update. I appreciate you all being able to get along without me while my wife was under surgery last time. I'm sorry I missed the meeting. The period since the June 4th meeting, staff has been primarily working on closing out projects at the end of the fiscal year, and a number of projects are producing their final reports, which you all will see shortly if you haven't already seen them. This is a time when many amendments come through to clean up the project. You should have been seeing those as well. Also, we are, as a staff, requesting approval by the council of adding up to one full-time equivalent. This is part of a process. The council has the authority to hire staff in consultation with the legislative coordinating committee. The legislative coordinating committee handles the personnel matters for the staff, writes the checks and things of that sort. So what we want to do is go to the LCC with a sound recommendation from the council that we add one FTE. We've been able to manage as projects have rolled out, but we finally reached a point where we've got approximately $500 million worth of work taking place in the field. And it's just become too much for one person to handle as a project administrator and that sort of thing. In addition, it provides us the opportunity to build a progressive ladder in terms of position descriptions and things of that sort. I'm not sure what the position name will be. I'm not sure what position grade will be. I am certain we have roll forward funding that can fund until we get a new appropriation. The reason I'm not sure about exactly what the position would be is that before we go forward in formally establishing the position, I want to work with the staff to make sure the position suits staff needs and there's consensus in the staff that this is the grade and type of position we want. So I've got a little homework to do, but I think we need council permission to start that work. If the council would like us to come back with approval of the level or something like that, we're more than happy to do that. So that's what I'm asking, is for someone to make a motion to approve up to one FTE additional staff with the consent of the LCC.
So we have in the packet agenda item 5 a suggested motion, which is I move to authorize the addition of one FTE to staff. Is someone interested in supporting that? I can tell you that there are very few organizations with the level of activity of $100 million a year that get by with three staff, and we are pretty lean.
I'll support the motion.
You'll make the motion?
Yes, I do.
Okay, Jane?
I just have some questions for fleshing it out a little bit more. How did you arrive, or where are you at right now in terms of a portion of a full-time or a full full-time? How did you derive the need for it? Is it due to backlog, or is it anticipated work? And will the position be a parallel position, or will there be a vertical line of reporting, or what do you anticipate?
It's due to backlog, primarily. In a cursory review of what the options are, there's one option is to add a professional program analyst administrator. The other one is to move positions up that we currently have and add a part-time clerk. And that's what we have to discuss as staff and settle on how to best do it.
I would just encourage whatever that motion is that the current staff is promoted accordingly because they're highly accomplished and capable.
I agree with your observation. Right.
Ron?
David, I guess I would feel a little better if I had more information about what this person was going to do, what level, and what it would the cost would be. So I would suggest that rather than us approving a position now, that you do your homework and come with us and say, I've done my homework. This is what I need. This person's going to do this. It's going to cost this. Would you approve that? That would make me feel more comfortable.
Would it be okay to approve staff pursuing an additional position with the proviso that they return with the grade staffing plan for approval?
For final approval?
Yeah.
That would work for me. Mm-hmm.
Are you willing to amend your motion to that?
Already done.
Any other discussion? All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Opposed?
You're on the phone.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. This has to be a roll call vote. Thank you, Rich, for keeping us honest.
Okay, Scott Rowe?
Yes.
Ron Shira?
Yes.
Elizabeth Stapson? Bob Anderson?
Yes.
Jim Cox?
Yes.
Representative Hansen?
Yes.
David Hartwell?
Yes.
Jane Kingston?
Yes.
Representative McNamara?
Yes.
Sue Olson?
Yes.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm here.
I'm sure.
I'm here, yes.
Oh, sorry, Senator.
I didn't make it.
Quietly, just not yet.
Number six on the agenda is an action item, which is the discussion and potentially engagement of a study looking at the biennial versus annual allocation process. As you know, this was something the legislature wanted us to look at. We need to look at it. The question is really how we look at it and who looks at it for us, and we have a proposal for that which staff is comfortable with, and I think would recommend we move forward with, but I'll let Phil speak to that perhaps.
As I said earlier, on June 4th, we indicated that staff would be working with management analysis and development with regard to this legislatively directed biennial recommendation study, which is to have the council working with the legislative committees make a recommendation to the legislative committees on whether or not to make recommendations on an annual or biennial basis. Currently, statute directs us to have an annual recommendation. We discussed in the past as a council whether we wanted an annual or biennial instead of an annual. But this has come up again, and the request has been made, and it's incumbent upon us to comply with the request, as I understand it. We took the initiative to meet with the Management Analysis and Development group out of MMB, specifically with Ralph Brown and Kirby and Pittman. Ralph is here today to give a presentation on what he has scoped out as a way to approach this study. There are a couple of things that I want to make as clear as I possibly can. The law, the proposal, the intent is for the council to make a recommendation. The hiring of a consultant is to gather facts and present those facts to the council for their the foundation of council recommendation. We went directly to MAD for a number of reasons, not the least of which is their understanding of government at all levels, their familiarity with grant programs, NGOs, and those kinds of entities, their familiarity with budget. It's been my observation through nearly 30 years of work in government that management analysis and development has done a very, very good job, and they have quite a fine reputation and are respected in terms of what they do. They've got the good seal of approval. You have an agenda item memo in your packet. I think that everybody can scratch out the suggested motion, and we will need a motion eventually. And as executive director, I request that the council consider placing a motion before the council to pursue an agreement with management analysis division to perform services to enable the council to make a recommendation to the committees of the legislature to deal with the legacy, which is what the law requires us to do.
Great. So why don't you come forth and tell us what it is you would do for us, and then we'll have a discussion about that.
This is Ralph Brown, the principal from Management Analysis and Development. And I don't want to steal his thunder, but
I'll go ahead. I don't have that much anyway. You already say it better than I will.
One of the discoveries is he's a former state council member. So he's served in the position you all are serving in now in terms of dealing with staff and the laws and things of that sort.
So, Ralph? Yeah.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Ralph Brown. I'm with MAD. I don't know how familiar you are with MAD, but just a moment. We're probably the only management consulting group in the nation that also happens to be a public agency. We are what is known in state government as a revolving fund. And what that means is we don't receive an appropriation to pay for our costs from the legislature. We self-fund ourselves on an ongoing basis by selling our services. And we work with state agencies, state colleges and universities, a lot of local governments, Basically, we are restricted by law to only offering our services to the public sector. And we provide a wide range of services depending on what our clients, what they need. Sometimes our clients hire us because they have work that needs to be done and they don't have the capacity to do it, so they'll bring us in temporarily. Other times we work with agencies that actually do have the capacity to do the work that's expected of them. But there is a need for a perceived neutrality, a need to assure stakeholders of various, sorry about that, stakeholders that the work is being done with a high level of objectivity. And for, 25, almost 30 years now, Matt has been involved with a wide range of projects in state government and local government, and we have developed a reputation for objectivity. I don't know if you need to know anything else about us. I could yammer about us all day. I won't. As we look at this particular situation here, as we see it, and this is pretty much what Bill was just saying, we see this as a situation where the council itself is being asked to make recommendations to the legislature. Should you have an annual cycle like you do now? Should you go to a biennial one? We don't see it as our role to be involved in making recommendations. Our role, if we work on this project, is to assist you and to support you, to help you as you're preparing your own recommendations. Our work, as we see it, would be involved with gathering the basic information that needs to be known in order to make a good recommendation. And not just to gather that data, but to help provide some analysis with you, to help so that you understand it. At the end of the day, when you make a recommendation to the legislature, I don't have the foggiest idea if you're going to be making a unanimous recommendation or if there will be divisions among the council. I don't know you. I've worked with many councils in state government. I haven't had the honor of working with you in the past. And but the one thing that I think should be certain is that this group as a whole should have a consensus around what the basic information is. There should be a common understanding of what the implications would be if you continue with the current cycle or switch to a different kind of cycle. And that's our job, is to make sure that you've got that comfort of knowing that you've got a good understanding of the situation. It is our job to gather data and to help turn that data really into information. The numbers don't really help anybody unless you can understand what they're about. So there's analysis involved that we would be providing. And then at the end, after receiving that analysis and doing whatever we can to help you with that, then the actual recommendation, of course, comes to the council itself. Just some of the activities that we see as important in gathering information, in addition to going over all the relevant documentation and statutes and so forth, we also want to talk to the people who were around at the beginning of this to get a sense of why the cycle was set up the way it was, what were the expectations back in the beginning, and how is that playing out today. We really have a strong need to talk to all the stakeholders who are involved in the process, and particularly the different kinds of grant applicants, to see how does this cycle and how does the proposed biennial cycle, how do they interact or might interact with their own cycles within their own organizations and the processes that they go through. We think that's a part of the story. And we also think we have a need to look at similar operations just to see what they do and how they do it and why. Just to the extent that it may have some bearing upon what would be a help here. That's basically the general direction we see ourselves heading into. We see ourselves doing documentation research. We see ourselves holding some small groups with like stakeholders to talk in small group settings about their perceptions, and see a strong need for individual interviews with the people along the way. I could go on, but that's the gist of it.
Great. Questions? Jane?
What's the cost estimate?
If you look at the back on page 3, not to steal your thunder. But they're estimating 181 hours at $125 an hour, so it's $22,625.
My concern is that this is not a new issue, that it's been fleshed out on the record already. And follow-up is, why can't we do it in-house, which I think I know the answer, but I'd like to hear it on the record. This is a pretty good-sized endeavor, and I want to go through it, you know, go into it carefully. I understand the function is going to be primarily facilitation, compiling, and providing clarification as necessary. So it seems maybe like overkill to me.
The answer to your question, I assume it's addressed to me.
Yeah.
The clear answer is neutral.
Yeah.
And I think you know that. What we have done historically around this issue is the former chair and staff put together a list of pros and cons, and the council spent part of a meeting discussing pros and cons and settled on continuing with an annual cycle. This is a more complex question than it appears at first blush. There are alternatives that can be taken into consideration. For example, one could decide to make a recommendation on all of the first fiscal year's projected income and half of the second year's projected income. And that is our first year recommendation, and some of the second year. Is that a good idea? I don't know. I only bring it up because there are a lot of combinations and permutations of annual income that isn't a separate issue. I think the other thing that, from a staff point of view, is important to get an outside view of is this question of the people that I would refer to as the graybeards, the people who have experience or had experience back in 2007. And work, some were legislators and some worked with legislators in crafting the current statute. And I think we have to find out what they were thinking and why they did what they did. And I think that that's requires quite a bit of skill interviewing work to make sure you get down to the basics and to the, I won't say the truth, but all of the considerations. And we don't have time to do that. There are other things that affect this decision, this action that staff took. Management Analysis Division is skilled. They're respected. They will help whatever the outcome is, they will help in the acceptance of the outcome. So the quality is there that we need. They are also a group that's readily available that we can go to and get an estimate. They are competitive historically. And I think it's really important that they understand state government and they understand the open meeting law. And the open meeting law has some ramifications on how we go about doing this. And it's the how we go about selecting and procuring. They know how to make sure that the open meeting law is obeyed. And if we were to go through an extensive search, that would have to be done through the open meeting law. So we would have to staff the search committee. And this is an alternative way to get high quality services without going through that, those hurdles.
Did that answer your question, Jane?
It started. The 12 key individuals under interviews, do you know who they are? What's the roster?
No. But we had
well, this is sort of a timeline.
We needed to break down how many individuals approximately, about how many groups we would gather, because that's simply for budgeting purposes as much as anything else about how much time we'd be putting into it. We looked to the council for some guidance on that as well. We're really looking for the people. In a project like this, it's not so much important to talk to a person because of a title that they have necessarily. It's what do you know, and what can you share with us? And so we would be looking to you to help with that. And as Bill said, we'd be talking to we need to begin, I think, by talking with some of the graduates, and maybe that's why I'm here. I really feel at home there.
Jim?
I just have a couple questions. Bill, when the legislature requests a decision like this, who pays for that? Does the legislature pay for that, or do we pay for it?
We are a legislative body, so we're paying.
It's coming out of our administrative budget.
Okay.
Another question? You look like you're formulating.
Yeah, I just have a question. How many of the people that work for you used to work in state government?
I think, if not everyone, all except for maybe one, almost everyone who's on our staff worked somewhere in state government or local government. Prior to coming to our organization. It's one of the things that we look for, because we know anyone of our consultants on day one has to be aware of the intricacies, the unique little quibbles that's being in a public agency places on the work that you do. We also have people with a variety of other backgrounds as well, in addition to working for other state agencies. Work with private consulting firms as well. Myself, I work with a private consulting firm a bit. I also worked with the State Board on Aging and the Department of Human Services prior to coming to MAD. And that's probably fairly typical.
And have a lot of your people that have worked for you then taken jobs in state government?
That's one of the dangers we have, that when, you know, as we have our center of people about, we're one of the few groups in state government where people have the chance. Not everyone in state government has a need to know the depth of their own agency and what it does. Because we're going all over state government, it's important for us to have a sense of the breadth of state government as well. And yeah, I have former colleagues working at DNR, at MnDOT, at DHS. Oh, can you call that thing? Yeah, we lose people.
So I guess my question would be, you know, we're so concerned about conflict of interest here. I mean, it seems odd that, you know, we would have a body that basically works through the legislature that's basically made up of people that work in state government facilitating us in coming to this decision, when really the argument, if you will, is between us and the legislature. I don't think the council has any problem with an annual appropriation. There's something with the legislature that has issues with the annual appropriation. And maybe you can tell us, Bill, what issues does the legislature have with us being on the annual? Why do they want us to go to a biannual appropriation? What is their argument?
Mr. Chair, I don't know what their argument is. The fact of the matter is that LCCR is on an annual
faceless right now. And they've been buying you on it.
Maybe they go back to buy anyone?
Mm-hmm. They're back to anyone.
Yeah. Just recently.
Okay. And they actually have the freedom that the commission, as I understand it, establishes the cycle that they're going to use on a periodic basis.
Scott?
I think I know the answer to the question, but I'll get it asked formally. You know, this to me is an unfunded mandate. You guys will do this. It costs $25,000. We're not going to pay for it. You've got to take it out of your current operating budget. Okay? Do we have the ability then to go to these reserves that we have that are set aside that are not spoken for and draw $25,000 of that money into our administrative budget to pay for this? If our budget didn't have the ability, or if we wanted to retain our very lean budget as it sits for something that might come up during the rest of the year, do we have the ability to do that? And if we do, can we do that?
My understanding is yes.
Rick?
Well, I'm not sure about that because you have to have an appropriation for a fund, and you have an administrative appropriation that's ongoing, and there's a reserve and an appropriation. But to go into unappropriated money, I don't think you have the authority to go into unappropriated money that has come in from the sales tax.
The money I'm speaking of is appropriated and is carry forward reserves. And we would go through LCC, as I understand. And it is set up to be used for preferably one time events.
Mr. Chairman, that's what I am clarifying, is because I think the question may have been about unappropriated funds in reserve versus the administrative funds that are coming in. Administrative funds, we have a balance that we can use for this. I do want to kind of point out, again, there seems to be a fundamental misunderstanding among members of the council. This council is a member of, is a legislative creation. It is a part of the legislature. MAD is not. MAD is part of the executive. So the legislature, and no legislative action becomes law without the governor's signature. So the legislature doing bad things to the council doesn't happen without a governor's signature. And so we have a governor's signature on a legislative bill here that is directing the council to make a recommendation. MAD doesn't have any direction on this. They're about as freestanding as you can get. A lot of what they do is deal with conflict management between staff within agencies. They're the professionals that are brought in rather than going through action which may result in people being fired. Bring people together. And I think that's a role that's needed, frankly, is to bring people together on this. Just to clarify, Mr. Chair, and to staff, so we have a requirement here in law to make a recommendation by January 1st of next year. And we also have a recommendation by law to make recommendations for appropriations. And it's staff's professional opinion that they cannot do both under the status quo.
Mr. Chair, that's our assessment.
So I had a question for you. First is whether or not 12 is the right number, and if it shouldn't be larger than that, and how open you are to expanding it if you get into this. But my second question is really, as I read this, you're looking at this as a talking to people who are either currently receiving funds or would like to receive funds, or people within the state government umbrella, I'll call it. You know, there are an awful lot of really smart people in the business of giving away money who don't work for state government. And wouldn't it make sense to include some of those in looking at best practices, which is what we're charged with? How do we make the best decisions possible? If you're open to and think it's appropriate to perhaps widen the scope to talk to some of the foundation professionals who might have a perspective that would be helpful to us as we look for a recommendation that we can come back to the legislature with.
Mr. Chair, I think that we're open to expand. This is a project that has not started yet. We're still in the concept of the phase of developing what it ought to be. And it can be expanded. That's not a problem at all at this point. And it's probably easier to make a decision like that up front than it is deep into it. But you're right. There is a lot to be learned from the private sector. The funny thing is, one of the things that MAD often does is help state agencies with their grant-making processes. I've written, I don't know how many proposals on behalf of state agencies going after funds from both the federal government and private foundations, and we've brought in literally millions of dollars that way. But more often than not, what we're hired to do is to create RFPs for state agencies, send out their requests for proposals, and then to help them in evaluating and judging which are the ones that are most appropriate to be funded, sort of walking through the entire process. There's a lot to grant making, and also an awful lot to bonding as well, which is also kind of similar, I think, in to the work that you're doing, more so perhaps than even programmatic grant making. And so, yes, there's great value in talking to a wide range of people. Again, we haven't started this project yet. I'm coming in as an intelligent but ignorant person. I do sort of stress the intelligent. I don't think I'm that stupid, but ignorant as well in terms of having an in-depth understanding. We've not started that. And it could very well be that looking at a variety of other sources will be giving us good ideas as well. I assume that an important part of this process is that as we go about gathering the information and finding form some kind of understanding of that information, we're sharing it with you. It's an almost iterative process. It's not that you have to sit back and wait for us to write a report and at the last minute you hear everything we have to say. It's more of a case of working with you and as that process goes on, there may value may be seen in expanding the scope. But the scope only gets expanded if that's a mutual agreement. So we're not going to be running off and looking at a whole lot of other things we've not talked about without your involvement.
Bill? Mr. Chair, I just wanted to say it's my understanding as well that the consultants will be interviewing council members up front and discussing these issues with them. If that's not clear in the proposal, we need to make it clear that they're coming to you in the beginning as well as in the end.
Bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the questions I have, and I talked to Bill about this, knowing this was coming forward, was, would there be any value in your process of interviewing the legislative auditor? Now, the legislative auditor has looked at Lasark County's outdoor heritage. I'm going to rack my brain, but I think at least twice, maybe even three times in the last 4 years, and found it to be working very, very well in its yearly or annual fashion, as well as many other things, the way administration-wise and whatnot. Do you see value in doing that, or would we have to make some kind of a recommendation, Mr. Chair or Bill or whoever, to make sure that entity is talked to and if they have any input that might be of value in us making a decision?
We've already presumed, as I was saying before, the big bulk of our work up front is really a documentation review. I mean, there's a lot of information out there. We don't want to act like this is not the starting point of looking at this question. And we've presumed already that the OLA reports are required reading. The notion of actually sitting down and talking with them to see what else we can learn from their staff, that can have value as well. We could add that to the list of folks we're talking to as well. There's not a problem with that. We are not saying at this point we will only talk to certain people, and that's it. This is our assumption. That's why we haven't named the people in the proposal. Our sense is that who we really need to talk to is something that will be discovered as the project goes on. But we can add that.
Could I follow up, Mr. Chair, with a question? LCCMR has gone back and forth, you said, between 2 and 1. Will you be involved in that process at all?
Myself, no.
And Mr. Chair, the MAP group was involved in the remaking of LCMR into LCCMR, and I think the word is facilitated the development of the plan that we now see in place with citizens and legislators sitting together.
Mr. Chair, can you give me a flavor as to why LCCMR went back to a 1 year versus 2?
I'm looking for the director. She was in the room a minute ago. It was the choice of the commission members. And I think it's perhaps Elizabeth could speak to it if she was there at the time of making the decision.
Thank you. I can only speak to the... I can't speak to this except for the years I was there before. And when we talk about the request for proposals each fall, we then also talk about the funding cycle. So that when you put out your request for proposals, is it going to be a biennial? How much money is available? That your request for proposal somehow, you know, have to dovetail with whether it's biennial or annual. It's quite often discussed, not always at length, but it's the pros and cons are usually put out there as to what the preferences of the different members are, and then a vote is taken. And it has fluctuated depending on who is on the commission, I think, to a certain degree. But LCCMR does not have the amount of funds that LaSalle Sams has. They've been running between 25 and 30 million. They really have some different criteria as to the types of grants that can be brought forth. Many grants are looked at each year, and they toyed with the idea as to should we have a biennial versus annual, not necessarily to drive with the legislative session, but to allow the members to be able to go to site visits 1 year, and then to have that time, because the process of listening to so many grants takes so much time out of your, there's no chance for field trips. So what I think I'm describing it correctly, some of the sense of the commission members when they went biennial was, well, let's have 1 year to look at the grants, and then the next year we can go visit projects and maybe have meetings out state and be able to meet some of the folks that are out state, get a better sense for what the state is doing. So I think probably there were more along that line, different reasons brought up, other than just matching with the legislature, because we did talk about that on occasion, matching with the legislature. But then, of course, then it's always trying to figure out, well, you know, does the biennial process really get us with the same people on the commission versus that are going to be approving this at the legislative session? You know, because you could have a change every 2 years, and if that, depending on when you start your biennial process, you could get caught up in a change. So it's going back and forth a lot. But I think the last time that I remember going to biennial was, well, then that will give us a chance to get out of state and see projects.
just to follow up.
Yep.
Mr. Chair. So the Section 3 biennial recommendation study was not a recommendation from this body. It was basically brought forward by a legislator then.
That's right.
That's correct. And I guess I don't know where that process or how that came about, because I certainly wasn't part of that. And as Representative Hansen said, we are a body to make recommendations to the legislature, and that only, and without a governor's signature, none of this happens. So obviously this did happen with the governor's signature, and we are now directed to do this. Whether we basically, I guess it doesn't matter whether we like it or not, we're going to move forward. I guess we can still make the decision as to whether we recommend that. Is that correct?
Yeah. This will give us the information for us to have a discussion and then make a recommendation to the legislature by January 1st.
Okay, thank you. And because I bring this up and spend a little time on this, that I've been with this group since day one. We've had this discussion before. We also hear the discussion of if it isn't broken, why try to fix it? And I happen to agree with that. I really question whether, and just most recently we had a project drop to the bottom line because it was not going to be funded, if I recall. So those dollars would sit for a longer length of time and not get put out into the, should we go to a biennial appropriation, that project then would drop out. We would not then have the legislative authority, obviously, to put that, say it's $1.5 million towards another project. Is that correct? So that $4 dollars would sit at the bottom of the line. That's the one of the real positives going on an annual basis.
Okay.
And as the governor does sign, he also does veto, as we well know. So, which is a good thing.
Move this on, Jane, last question, and then we'll ask for a vote.
I'm confident in the ability of NAD to do the work. I view this exercise as less out of necessity and content. I think it's form over substance. And I think it's worth it to do a legitimate study to build relationships with the legislature and show good faith. I believe that the issue has been fleshed out already, and I think that the correct solution has been arrived at, but I'll try not to let that preclude an open mind in the process. But I am concerned about the budget, and I'm concerned about it being open-ended. I heard comments about it being open-ended, and I think that we should keep this at some kind of a limit. And I think what we have here is more than adequate to do what's necessary to get a good, fair, broad work result.
Mr. Chair, the proposal, as I look at it, is capped. And if they don't use the hours, we're not charged.
Yeah, I'd rather see it less than the cap, but...
Okay, it's not on the end.
I understand.
So, Rick?
I move to authorize staff to execute a contract with MAD not to exceed $22,625. To meet the statutory obligation of providing data to the council for the study, the statutory requirements.
Any discussion on the motion?
Sure. With regard to the second item under activity, the process cycle and review, could it include past council members as well as council members? Or do we need an amendment to do that?
Chair, I don't think we need an amendment for the board to work with MAD to include past council members.
Thank you.
Okay. Phyllis. Representative.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Since I was the person who put this into the bill, I thought you might be interested in what my reasoning was behind it. First of all, I have a lot of experience with natural resource funding, having been chair of the state, one of the state departments funding commission for many years. I was also chair for two biennia of LCMR. And one of the things, I think there's a lot of miscomprehensions of what's going on. First of all, one of the things that happens is that the legislature does meet every year in session, and we can make changes to budgets at any time. And one of the things, specifically in looking over the council's budget, one of the things that you see is a lot of things are the third phase of a five-year project and things like that. And I also, before I was in the legislature, supported myself by writing grants for the university when I was a research associate at the University of Minnesota. And writing a grant application is not a trivial pursuit. And we did see one problem in the legacy funds last year with the arts and cultural heritage, where somebody, you know, and again you can argue who's dumb and whose computer wasn't working and that kind of thing. But one of the very significant funded projects in arts and cultural heritage missed, which has a two-year budget, and they missed the deadline for, you know, just kind of some kind of renewal. And going rigidly by the rules, arts and cultural heritage totally cut them off. You know, it's a big enough organization so they could work within it. But the whole thing ended up going through a hearing. You know, I was really irritated about that, because particularly because part of the argument was whether they had met the deadline or not, was whose computer was working and whose was misfunctioning, and that sort of thing. But it ended up going through the whole process of an administrative hearing judge, which can be, you know, I don't know what the exact amounts of dollars that it cost. And in the end, as I expected, the guarantee was justified, the money was released, it was kept off for 6 months and so forth. So the total reapplication for a grant is not a trivial, that is not necessarily a trivial matter. What I would envision, and I would hope that you decide that you will go to a biennial budget, what I would envision is that some projects make total sense. And just look at your own records. You're saying that these are going to go on for many years. It makes total sense to have a biennial budget. And the kind of time that you spend looking at something as a new grant application would much better be spent in oversight. I would imagine some of them make very much more sense to be on a year-by-year basis. And I would hope that what would come out of this is that you would have kind of a combined budget of some that you want a total review at 1 year, some you just want some oversight at 1 year, and I would hope that you would use the extra time for more oversight of projects, for more looking at projects on the ground, for more doing this is the thing that my good friend Ron Scherer and I have all the things we disagree on, but that we totally agree on, is that we'd like to see more connectiveness, and we'd like to see more things going over, more projects working together from all the parts of the legacy funding, in to show a real result in a specific area. And I think that if you have more time and you take this extra time from the totally new renewal looking at grant applications, we'll be able to do a better job on this. And the major thing is that we have, I don't know, 20 years left, whatever the number is, and we want the public to feel that their vote was right and that what they got gave them something for it. And I just think that the biennial budget gives you more flexibility, not less flexibility. I'm not on LCCMR anymore, so I don't know why they've gone back and forth before. I do know people very closely involved in the process who are very not happy when the students go back to manual budget, but you know, people do what the legislature tells them to do. So, you know, I hope that you'll look at how you would function under this. Do not think that means money will sit for 2 years. It doesn't. You meet and we meet. And recommendations will, even if it's a biennial budget, projects, they always happen with LCMR. Projects are changed, renewed, you know, direction has changed and so forth. So, you know, as I said, my opinion is, you know, obviously in a direction opposite from some of the members here. But I have great trust in the people who need chosen to give you a good analysis of it.
We do need to move on.
Just real quickly, thank you for that, Representative Condon. And so I guess what I take from your comments was that there are some problems. I'm sorry, the public is not happy with the work that we're doing then. I didn't gather that from you totally, but I've never heard that, if that's the case.
No, I didn't say that. Okay. What I just said is that in the course of doing budgets, there are some things that work better if you put a two-year framework. You know, maybe even more, but the Constitution tells us we can't do more than that. I know on LCMR, very often, for very important things, like the forest inventory and some minerals inventory, we said, we know this is going to take at least 5 biennia. But the Constitution doesn't allow us to appropriate money more than, unless we're bonding for something, more than 2 years at a time. So we're telling you we intend to do this over 5 biennia, and we're appropriating it 2 years at a time. So essentially that's a limit that we live with. And I'm saying that some projects that make very much more sense, and just look at your own, get anything I'm saying, just look at what you said yourself, and you'll see that many of them say, you know, we intend to do 5 years and so forth. What I'm saying is that you'll get a better look at it if you make the initial whatever appropriation you're doing 2 years at a time, understanding that you're going to be looking at as it goes on, and that some things that doesn't make sense for, and some things it does make sense for. And do what you see.
Rick?
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion to authorize the contract and not the LCMR.
Thank you. Any other discussion? All in favor of the motion? Roll call. Oh, we've got to do a roll call. Sorry, Sandy.
Elizabeth Wilkins?
Yes.
Bob Anderson?
Yes.
Jim Cox?
No.
Representative Hanson?
Yes.
Senator Ingraham?
No.
Jane Kingston?
Yes.
Representative McNamara?
Yes.
Sue Olson?
Yes.
Scott Robb?
Yes.
Ron Shera?
Yes.
Chair Hartwell?
Yes.
9-2.
9-2. Motion carries. Thank you. Next members, we'll move to agenda item 7, which is the 25-year framework and call for request check-in bill.
Mr. Chair, it has been 5 years since the council sat in this room and adopted a 25-year framework and translated that into a call for requests. We have worked essentially with the same framework and, more importantly, with the same call since then. Questions have come up about whether or not the call is exactly what we want it to be, specifically in the area of criteria, application of criteria, those kinds of things. In addition, there's been new information, for example, the statewide fisheries plan and the prairie plan that have come out since we did our development of our 25-year framework and plan. So this is a recommendation on the part of staff. There's no requirement that we do it to engage the people who helped us establish the framework and call in the beginning and have them go back and touch base with the interest groups, the professional scientists and things like that, and put the framework together and touch base with you on whether or not the material we're using to solicit requests is the stuff that you want to put forth. We've asked Charlie Peterson of the Management Analysis Division to come tell us about what he proposes to do for us. Charlie facilitated, along with Judy Brew, the original work that was done in 2009 and 8.
Great. Alan?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. This is Matt, too. Ralph did the presentation and background on Matt. I will not go into that any further. I think you have a copy of the proposal that we put forward in front of you. Just want to highlight...
It's labeled agenda item number 7.
...pieces with that. It took a couple seconds to get to that. Basically, as Bill outlined, this is sort of a check-in. You're one-fifth of the way down the path for the 25-year framework. What we're going to do is basically ask the question, are you going the way that you want to go? We want to look back at what's been done. We want to review the various documents and guidelines that have got you to the point that you're at. And we want to discuss, determine, talk about, is there anything in these documents that, looking into the future, we need to change or alter? Is there anything, again, looking into the future in your processes that we want to change or alter, ultimately to improve the effectiveness and efficiency of the council and its recommendations to the legislature? This is at a very high level. We're not going to drill down super deep into any pieces. Sort of looking at it, it's what I call sort of a touch and go. Talk to folks, get the ideas, bring those ideas in front of you, talk about them, see what we can do to tweak the process, alter the process, again, to improve the outcome. Primary focus is going to be the 25-year framework, followed up probably also by what you folks call the call for funding request. In that 25-year framework, there's a piece called planning and managing for results. That's also going to be a piece that I think that we'll look at and talk about. If you look on the proposal, we identified primarily three activities. The main activity is the first one. It's the driver, basically interviews with council members, you, and also staff. Conceptually, sort of as Ralph talked about, this is still a proposal. This is nothing in concrete. This is an idea that is in front of you to talk about, to work on, and then move forward on if you so choose. In these interviews, they'll roughly be probably about an hour in length. Preference would be to do them over the phone, but if somebody wants to do them in face-to-face, be happy to end up doing that. There'll be a series of questions we'll probably send out a few days in advance, so you give a little bit of a chance to thought about it, and then raise these questions over the phone, gather the information on them. Traditionally, in this type of format, the questions will follow along, basically, for you, what's working, what's not working, what could have worked better. Looking back into the past, what have you learned over that period of time? How effective have you been? What's happened that maybe over those 5 years that you want to build on and maybe do something differently? And then look into the future. What do you see in the future that can help propel the council forward in its process? What are some things that may cause some problems that may need to be addressed? Basically looking at presently what's happening, what can we learn from the past, what are we anticipating that we need to address as we look into the future? From those interviews, we'll identify a series of themes. Basically, they will be comments that happen frequently. Probably not just going to be one person's comments. It's going to be a comment that we're going to hear across the board. My intent, and I think my perspective anyway, it makes sense. I'm not going to identify where those comments came from, other than several members said something along those lines. I will present those themes back to you, to the council. I'll probably do a preview to the chair and staff prior to that meeting so everybody knows what's coming. Then we can talk about those themes and identify or decide which ones that we want to talk about in depth. So that's sort of plan phase one, step one, activity one, is to gather that information from you. The second activity is the one that I don't think the proposal describes quite what the thinking is currently. I think when we initially talked about this, we thought about maybe using sort of the ecological sections piece. I think maybe that thinking has shifted over to having a group interview or focus group or whatever you want to call it of what we would identify as experts. These would be people that I would ask you to identify. Who should we talk to? What are some of, I like Bill's comment as far as graduates. What are some of those people that have looked at this process, viewed this process, that would be helpful to getting their comments and thoughts on? The thought now is probably rather than several meetings, if we can identify 8 to 10 to 12 people, it would be nice to do that in one meeting to have the conversation. That also would be documented. That also would be brought back to the council for your discussion. And then the third piece is based on those themes, based on the interviews, based on the expert focus group, those themes would be presented to you. We'd talk, we'd select key areas to develop some level of action on. Again, the thinking for those sorts of conversations, I don't know the information yet, so I can't give you the specific details, but sort of the standard format is to identify the facts, what we know, reflections, what do we like, what don't we like in those facts, thoughts, what do we think, what are some ideas, some options, and then ultimately building towards action. What should we do? That's the proposal in a nutshell. I'll be quiet for a few minutes and entertain any questions you may have.
Mr. Chair, just one summary statement. In December or January, we'll be looking at the call and go after the next round of requests. The objective here is to make sure that this call, if it goes out in January, is what we want, that it's coordinated with the next steps, like evaluation and things of that sort. And that's the real bottom line of what we're about here. So what the idea is, look back in time, where have we been, where have we come, what have we done? This is our main instrument for getting it done. Let's revise this if necessary.
Tim? Okay, so you're talking about something entirely different. We're not talking just about the 25-year plan then, Bill?
No.
What else are we talking about? Our call?
Our call. Specifically things like the statewide priority criteria, which we've had a lot of discussion on, that most of you have been involved with, some of it's been offline as well with individual members. Mr. Chair, Ms. Kingston has
I think Betty was with
If you're looking at it being part that you want this information before you do your request for proposals or your criteria, you may want to back up that timeline a little bit. I think this one says January through January 31st, 2014. Could this be facilitated earlier so we could have results in order to be able to think about that before you?
Our call goes out in the spring, so that would give us time.
But somebody referred to a meeting in December or January that where we discussed that criteria?
December or January to make changes in the fall.
Yeah. Would we have that information before that meeting? Or should we have that information before? Okay, because it does say this would be continued. I just wanted to make sure the information was there when you wanted.
We'll make sure.
Two quick minor questions administratively. Do you bill on quarter hours, and how do you bill for travel?
We do not bill. We bill by the hour. Straight up.
So if you have 5 minutes, does that count as an hour?
No.
Okay. Where do you cut it off?
You know what? I've never had that question, and basically I will cut it off at a comfortable point. It's not necessarily a, you know, dollars and cents. We're not necessarily operating from a law firm standpoint.
How do you do it then?
By the aspect of if it's a 5 minute phone call, it's not worth billing for that time. For an hour interview, if it bills 5 minutes over that hour, if it goes 10 minutes over that hour, it's probably going to be billed for an hour.
Okay. And how do you bill for travel?
Travel time, I'll be honest, we have more conversations about how we end up billing for travel than anything else.
Well, I would hope
we
do not bill, your lowest rate.
Yeah, we do not bill full-time for travel. We will bill probably a percentage. If it's a, you know, 3 hour trip up and back, we'll probably bill for an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Okay. Thank you.
Scott? One last little question. You indicated that your number one item was that you were going to do these interviews and that
yes.
they take about an hour.
Yes.
Okay. We're going to do 14 interviews for an hour, but you got up to 42 hours.
True.
Are three people going to interview me at the same time?
No, they're
not. Is that where you get the 42 hours?
No. Well, how you end up getting the 42 hours is there is time for prep time for doing that. There's time for developing those questions. So we're asking you maybe not exactly the same question every time, but there will be, you know, a series of questions that we'll go through. So that time is incorporated into that. We also have to document this. Because if we're going to bring back to you the themed ideas, we need to be documenting the thoughts of those interviews. The budget piece is basically 1 hour for the interview, 1 hour for prep, 1 hour for documentation. That's how we get to the 42.
Thank you.
You bet. Rich?
Two things. One on the 25-year plan, I think there's a real value of looking at new plans or if there's been changes in science or if we've achieved goals for those to be recognized at the 5-year or the 10-year or 15-year level. So incorporating that, doing that basic review, because we've had the Prairie Plan adopted, I believe, since initiation. So incorporating that into the content of the science of what we develop things on, I think, is important. However, where I disagree is, and I disagree a little bit on this with the previous one as well, is our responsibility is to the people of Minnesota, not to the people who want the money, or the people who were around at the beginning, or the special interests who believe this is their fun. And I would feel much better if we were actually going out and talking to the public. Not the people who have an interest in this by seeking the money or working on the legislation that enabled it. And I think you'll get a different response. I think you're going to find something different if you've had regional meetings seeking input from the general public. I think that's who we answer to, not the graybeards or the good old boys who were there at the beginning. But people who we are spending their money, who expect us to achieve outcomes that they voted for.
I like the idea of reviewing where we've been and where we're going. This has already been mentioned. There have been some new plans for fisheries, prairies, etc. come up since this council was formed. Invasive species has become a new issue since this council was formed. And as I've had discussions with my friend Representative Khan, I see a need to coordinate more of these projects with the other funds that seem to be missing. At least in my view, as I look at some of these proposals, in the proposal it says if they have any other funds or approached any other funds, and no, I go, why? Why not? when they're clearly the clean water part of this plan. So that seems to be an element that's missing. Because really what I hope to see this council achieve is to, as I say, move the needle. And I think we have moved the needle in some places, but as Representative Town and I have talked about, a watershed project that incorporated all of the funds, etc., where you could move the needle and people could see, the people that Representative Hansen talking about, they can see cleaner water coming out of a creek and buffers and a watershed coming to life that was dying. I mean, that might be a fruity dream of mine, but that's what I'm at. So anyway, to conclude, I like the idea.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve a contract now to on the 25-year framework as presented, up to $15,375.
Okay. Motion's on the floor. Any discussion? Jim?
But you just mentioned the 25-year plan, but we're going to also the 25-year plan as a call.
Okay.
It looks so good, friendly.
Please. Add that.
Any other questions?
Yeah. Sandy? Jason?
Yes.
Representative McNamara? Sue Olson?
Yes.
Yes.
Scott Ross?
Yes.
Ron Shira?
Yes.
Elizabeth Wilkins?
Yes.
Bob Anderson?
Yes.
Jim Cox?
Yes.
Representative Hansen?
Yes.
Chair Hartwell?
Yes.
Senator Ingrickson?
Yes.
Motion passes. Thank you. We look forward to working with you. Next, members, we want to get into a discussion about the evaluations and scoring that you went through, which will lead us to a discussion about our hearing and what we want to do for our hearing. But I want to turn this over to staff to talk about what we did individually and collectively as the council in terms of reviewing these proposals and what it might tell us or point out to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, thank the members for going through 55 proposals and taking a look at how they address same criteria for priorities. It is not a trivial job. It takes time and it takes a lot of thought. I think the important points that I want to make very quickly about the scoring is this individual scoring is to get your view of how the project fits with the criteria. It may appear to be a relative score between proposals or requests, but I think it's very difficult to use it that way because it's difficult to consistently apply the criteria. I think it's important to demonstrate due diligence, and that's what we've done. You have in front of you a summary sheet that looks like this. It has each member's name at the top of the column and the project title down the side. The total score by the member is in the cell by the project, and the average is shown out to the right along with statistics on members scoring at 80 above or 75 above. One of the things that struck me in looking at this is that there was less of a distribution than we've had in the past. The numbers were tighter. It was more difficult to find a significant break in my mind when I first looked at it. I think that these are good. It's a good way for each member to tell every other member how they value a proposal. You also have the summary of member evaluation scores for each request, ordered in high to low, with a technicolor matrix that shows strength of support. So the more red in the row, the stronger the support. The more blue, the cooler the support. Or should I say purple? And that's ordered by rank order on the average, and by project ID. Next to last in the package, you have comments. Not everybody submitted comments. This is another way for intermember communication. It's on the record on the website. All of this is on the website, for that matter. And then last but not least is a staple package that's each individual member's scores on the criteria themselves. So you can see that Mr. Cox, who's the top sheet, gave the DNR Wildlife Management Area Scientific and Natural Area Acquisition Phase 6 an 8 out of 10 on clear strategies affecting and that sort of thing. And a 4 out of 10, you might note, on the other funds, the leverage. And when you sum his individual scores, they total 63. If there is a conflict of interest, it's noted in the summary sheet. It should also be noted in the individual sheets. The individual sheets are on the website. And that's the scoring material. We put this agenda item on the agenda to give the members some time to discuss how they felt about requests and to use the scoring material to facilitate that discussion.
Any questions about this, how we did it? Sue, you wrote lots of comments. Thank you.
I did write lots of comments. I, as a new member, I had a difficult time trying to grade on a curve on 10 different, very different categories. I ended up basically, if people are wondering why my scores are so high across the board, I went to a pass-fail system on about 6 of them and gave high scores if they basically were a pass, and then really narrowed down on the other ones. The reason for that is at this juncture, I don't have the level of experience and knowledge to be able to make a more intelligent decision on the ones that I went pass-fail on. But for me, it was a lot easier to do a lot with the comments, and that's why you'll see my scores being pretty high this year. They're not likely to be next year.
I think that one of the keys to this is we all have our different ways of doing this and interpreting it, but we're going to be reasonably consistent with ourselves. So in terms of coming to an average, it ends up working out fairly well, even if Jim and I have a different way in our head of seeing it. We're consistent project to project. So it does blend out. I think, Scott, your comments at our last meeting about because you're scoring it a certain way doesn't mean it should get an allocation. This is a way to begin the discussion and to for all of us to see how we're collectively thinking. And I think as we go forward with this, I assume everyone's had a chance to review the comments, but certainly when we get to the hearing phase, it's going to be really important to pull those comments out and make sure that we're answering questions when we hear from people so we're making the smartest possible recommendations that we can. I did share with Bill and the rest of the staff, I took this and did a little more analysis in terms of what the cost per acre, cost per mile were, and I might ask staff to pass that out before we get to the actual hearing phase, because there were some interesting comparisons that came up in terms of that. And I think as we look going forward, looking at overhead costs per acre and such are interesting things to compare one to the other, and we haven't asked for stuff in a format that allows us to do that always, but it might be something we look at for the call next group. So those are my comments. Other comments and thoughts?
This is a difficulty I had on the other commission too, was not knowing funding histories and a little fuzzy on the terminology of sup and sub, supplement, substitute, and supplant. It's difficult in that category to know how to score. We really need a funding history. And so I would suggest in the future that, or maybe for the hearings, that when people come to present, that they give us some type of a funding history, if it's been an ongoing project or these are ongoing programs, that we have some type of a funding history so we can be very clear on that. And then the other thing is, at LCCMR, we had a lot of maps. And in some places here, there just simply were no maps, so that you're talking about acreages, or we're going to do this here or this there, with no reference points, or seeing what the adjoining property was, and such like that. And we really do need that in order to make a good decision. Now, I'm assuming those things will come with really.
You will get more of that than you want to read.
Yeah, right. But I'm thinking up front, for doing some of the scoring, we almost need some to figure out a better way to get some of that information if we're going to use that as scoring criteria.
So what I would say is start to develop a list of things you think would be helpful to the next time we go through. And before we do a call, we'll have a discussion about what we could do that would improve this going forward, because we're all going to have that as we go through, and, mm-hmm. and some will make sense to just you, and some will make sense to everybody, and collectively we'll come to a place of making the process more robust.
Mm-hmm.
And part of, I think, what the last proposal that we just approved for MAP will do is help us with some of that as well. Other comments just generally? Ron?
Well, I don't know if there's a solution here, but my eyes fog over looking at all the prairie proposals and trying to say, is this one better than the other, or are they all equal? And it just seems like it's a shotgun approach, and it would be interesting if we could there's some clarity as to what are we achieving here. I guess any prairie preserved or restored is a good thing, but I get my eyes fogged over with all these prairie projects.
I think the question that I would encourage you to ask as we go to hearings is what's the conductivity and the system opportunity with any of the proposals versus a postage stamp type of thing, because that will help in some ways. But I agree. I have the same problem with WMA. I mean, every organization wants us to do a WMA that's important to them, but we have no overall ranking from the DNR or anyone else as to what's the most important for us to do. And I think we need to do some work on that to be better, because, you know, everybody thinks what's in their backyard is the best, but our job is to figure out what's best statewide, and we're going to have to struggle with that a little bit.
I had a similar thought when you look at see how they're going to maintain these projects, etc. It's well, the DNR is going to do it, or it's going to be turned over to DNR, and they go, yeah, that means they're going to own it, but are they going to manage it, and how big is DNR going to have to get to handle all of this land, which raises, you go, I don't know, I see a lot of wildlife management areas now that, in my book, could use a lot more management than it's getting, and now we're adding more acreage. It seems like there's a point of no return.
Rick?
I think, kind of following on our last action item, things continue to be dynamic. And even since we did our evaluation, we've had facts come out that the CRP sign up is 1.7 million acres out of 3.3 that are going out. So we're going backward on CRP. We have challenges, I think it was in yesterday or the day before's paper, about conversion because of the high commodity prices. But we're losing wetlands or woods. So things are happening out there that we may not even thought of at this rate 5 years ago when things were voted on. So I think it's important as we, when we score and we have proposals that deal with these things, is to have that data kind of in the back of our mind that things are changing pretty quickly in our state. And whether that's a 1 year or 2 year cycle, or what the responsibility we have is to try to bring that into our decision making, because it, I mean, losing 1.6 million acres is a lot of acreage. I think that's a nationwide number. But it has impacts when you look at the total number of acres that are coming out, and then it impacts. So here the public is invested in acreage for 10 years or 15 years, and it's going to go under the plow, versus here's something that's under the plow that could come into something else. So I think when we ask questions, the value of the proposers here is to try to get from them, how do we deal with this? You know, how, is what we're, when we make a recommendation on spending, is this something that's going to be effective and ongoing, or is it making a difference? Is it making a difference in this? And I think that's what Ron was saying too. But it concerns me just what we've been seeing last, since we've done this. You know, just since we've done the scoring, there's decisions that are made by landowners as they make, as they look at their property, and we weren't quite anticipating this big conversion.
Yeah, we can thank the federal government for screwing up our grants.
Other comments, General?
Just quickly to add, David, to your information of the numbers that you crunch for the types of project, cost per acre, cost per mile. I do a cost per FTE per year, and percentage direct services, and percentage leverage, and percentage capital equipment or other equipment, and how much ends up on the ground. And if people would find that interesting, I'd be happy to share it. I'm sure they'll find some errors in it too.
I would encourage you to send it to staff, and staff distribute it to everyone who can decide if it's of value to you.
And it just shows some patterns, or you know, it's you still have to look at every project individually, but it does show some comparisons that are might generate questions.
Jane and I exchanged what we were working on, and I think in the end there's some analysis that can be done on behalf of everyone going forward. We can come to an agreement what would be helpful to look at. So we're all looking at the same information. You know, there are a lot of great projects in this, and we're going to have to make some tough choices about what to recommend, and we're not going to make bad choices among good projects for a little more here and a little less there. I mean, it becomes sort of a what touches you personally and seems to make most sense, but there's some great, great stuff that we're looking at that will really make a difference. So we'll just have to work together to figure out what the best set of recommendations are. So, well, that's the generic member scoring and evaluation. Next on our agenda is the hearing agenda, which is really what projects do we want to hear. And we've got four bullet points here to talk about specifically, with the last being which proposals do we want to hear. One of the things that I'm sure you all noticed is that we have and we talked about it at our last meeting, we have a proposal from Metro Parks And then we have, which contains, I believe, 12 different proposals within that, or projects within that. And then we have a number of similar projects that were submitted individually. So we're being asked to rank some projects twice. They're not all perfectly the same. It's very confusing. As Sue said last time, we really have no choice but to work with what we have, but next time we might be a little smarter about saying you can't submit a dual proposal. I've spent a fair amount of time trying to figure out what we ought to do given the situation to allow us to make an intelligent set of decisions. And I have come to the conclusion that it would probably make no sense for us to hear some projects individually and then a group proposal which would include some of those same projects or close to projects. So I have a suggestion which I'm going to pass out, which is here, which staff and I went through. I will say I did meet with Representative Kahn about this, just to let her see what it was that I was thinking, and made it very clear that it was my thinking alone. But I believe we should take all of the projects as they came in, and there were 12 projects within the Metro Council package, and ask them all to ask that we all treat them as individual projects, and in essence break apart the 12 and hear them all as separate projects, giving them all a full discussion on their merits, which would be much more difficult in a joint proposal. So if you want to just take a look at this, project number 1 and 2 on this list are Anoka County. And they have in those two projects, one for $270,000 matched with $30,000, one with $200,000 matched with $20,000. And then they submitted an individual request for $470,000 matched by $50,000. There's a slight difference in the language. I would recommend we just hear their individual request instead of including that as part of the Metro package. Carver County, on the other hand, has a proposal in here for $111,000, but they didn't put in a separate one. I think, to be fair, we should ask them to submit an independent proposal and then hear that. Dakota County, I believe, had two proposals in. One was for 437 acres of restoration, and one for 437 acres for acquisition and restoration. That's the same property. I would recommend we just hear the standalone proposal for the $1,550,000, which covers both the restoration and acquisition. And so it goes. I don't want to go through all of these at this point, but my logic is this would be a way for us this year, since there is some confusion, to ensure that we are hearing all of these and listening to the merits of each project. So that's my proposal to you. You can slash it or adopt it, but I think we have to do something that's intelligent to get us through the hearing process with this confusion that we've got. Jim?
So, David, just so I understand, so we basically took the bundled project and broke each individual segment of that out, and that's what we're going to listen, so we're throwing the individual projects out and the bundled projects. And we've just broken the bundled project down to each individual.
Yes, we would take the and hear each individual project as it made sense according to this sheet. So my recommendation for action would be on 1 and 2 to hear the project that they submitted that was individual.
Okay, but some of them that were in the bundled project that weren't as individual.
We would hear them separately.
Separately. Okay, so the bundled project going out.
Yep.
We're going to read them. They're all the individual projects, plus the individual projects that weren't presented as an individual.
That's right. Okay. There were three metro projects which weren't in the metro package, and of course, those we would handle as individual projects and aren't really part of the analysis, but they're mentioned here just so that it's clear.
This includes all metro projects.
This includes the metro parks project and some independent metro parks proposals that weren't part of the metro park proposal. There are some other projects that have activity in the metro area that are not on this list.
I understand it makes sense to me. I don't understand why the three that are not in the Metro Council package are included, because they're standalone as it is.
Only that they were parks, and just so that it was, so everything was there.
Okay.
Nothing beyond just visibility. So, Rick?
Mr. Chair, so your intent here is that every individual proposal, whether it was in a bundled package before or was submitted separately, will get a hearing.
My intent is that every project would be treated independently. What I'm recommending we do when we get down to which ones do we want to hear is assume we will hear everything and then remove any specific project that as a group we decide doesn't meet our criteria. And that may be zero, it may be 10, I don't know what it would be, but to treat all of these as independent projects instead of as a bundled project for consideration.
This requires action on the part of these 12 projects to resubmit. So what kind of a timeline are we talking about, and will we rescore them?
It would require resubmission. It would require submission only where there wasn't a standalone request.
Right.
If there is a standalone request, there'd be nothing.
I understand.
So I think we were thinking by the 15th.
The standalone request is on the ones that had overlap. There was, you pointed out a difference in the Dakota County one.
Yeah, we would take, if you look at the recommendation, it would be here HA06, which is the standalone request, which is for more money.
As already scored.
That's correct.
Okay, so we have three that would require resubmission and us to rescore. And what kind of a deadline do you have?
I think that's open, but we were feeling 2 weeks.
Do you think the proposers can do that?
No. But it's got to be pretty quick. And I don't think, I have to say, I don't think it's about rescoring. I think it's about going to directly to a hearing. And we have to decide today what we're going to hear.
Okay.
I don't think we can, we're not going to get together and make another decision.
All right.
We created this by not anticipating the confusion. We're going to have to deal with a little confusion and just work our way through it.
So what does it take? Does it take a motion to adopt your proposal to hear them individually? If it does, I'll make that motion.
Yes, it would be a good idea to have that.
I make a motion to hear them individually, and the ones that do not have a standalone individual submission, that they submit it as a standalone and do it within the time frame designated by the council.
Okay.
I would only amend it to the extent that it would be a good exercise for us to be consistent and score it. Doesn't have to be submitted necessarily, but it puts everybody on the same footing.
And then that motion, if I might make an addition, that would then remove the bundled project in its entirety. Okay, we hear them individually, the bundle project goes away.
Anyone have any thoughts on that? I wouldn't see any reason to hear a bundled project unless the proposer really felt a strong need to come in and support it, but all of their projects would be included. And it's important to note that in the Met Council proposal, there is nothing in it for administrative dollars for them to administer what essentially is a re-grant program. So we're not taking anything away from them by doing that.
Rick? Mr. Chair, just to clarify again, we're not throwing out the bundle proposal. We are considering components of the bundle proposal. All components would be considered.
That's right. We are throwing it out, but we're not really throwing it out.
We're eliminating it as a project number, but everything in it's getting heard individually.
That's right. Okay. Any discussion? Sue?
This is a good idea.
Roll call vote, Sandy.
Joe Cox.
Yes.
Representative Hansen.
Yes.
Senator Ingerson.
Yes.
Jane Kingston.
Yes.
Representative McNamara.
Yes.
Sue Olson.
Yes.
Scott Rawl.
Yes.
Ron Shero.
Yes.
Elizabeth Wilkins.
Yes.
Bob Anderson.
Yes.
Chair Hartwell.
Yes.
11-0.
Great, Beth. So, the next thing on the list, and we'd really like some feedback on this, is how much time we want to take per proposal. Just to remind those of you that have been here and to acquaint those of you that haven't been here, last year we allocated half an hour per proposal. And we ended up running hours ahead. We had a few projects where we took the half hour, and a lot of projects that were continuations where there weren't questions that didn't take as much time. Now, having said that, everyone who was listening to proposals last year had seen, and they were continuations, had seen proposals the year before that they were continuations, so it was focused on the difference more. We have some new members here who might want to take a little more time, so it's not completely simple to say how long should we do it. Staff's recommendation is 20 minutes with a bit of break time built into the budget that we could then absorb with those proposals, which really seem to take a little extra time. But this is a council decision, so I would love some input.
You know, the one bullet point down is days and length of hearing days. You know, to me that's kind of integral to that. I can tell you that my personal opinion is I would rather two marathon days that start at 7 in the morning and get done at 9 o'clock at night versus driving all the way home and coming back 1 week later for another day. Okay, so if we could do two long days of hearings, okay, make a commitment to do that, okay, and then allocate the time within that 24 hours, however long days those are going to be, that would, you know, be helpful. I would prefer 2 days instead of two different weeks.
Okay. I'm seeing some nods there. Are you willing, Elizabeth?
No. I'm thinking that maybe we aren't asking enough questions if we don't take a half hour. I'm not trying to say that you folks weren't doing your job last year, because I think you did an excellent job last year. But as time goes on, and you have ongoing projects, it would be, okay, let's look a little bit, delve a little bit into how this dovetails into what you've done, what have you spent. You know, those kinds of things. What kind of leverage have you brought in? The other thing is, and I alluded to before, as time goes on, we do need to look at funding sources. So I think we do need to spend time asking people, okay, you know, what other funding sources do you have? What have you had in the past? I think this is an issue that's been brought up in the press, and it's been spoken about a lot where I am coming from, is that we need to be a little bit more critical about how funds are being spent now versus where they used to come from. So I'm wondering if maybe we need to ask a few more questions and expect a little longer presentation from some of these folks. I know at LCCMR we were never ahead. Maybe some of you remember.
I ran the meeting too.
but truly, you know, we had so many questions. Maybe that's a different thing. But if you, I'm thinking that the other way, that although I don't want to come in for another week, I think we need to figure out what's important for us to hear and how long it takes, and then fashion our days. And I'd like to see it in two long days, but if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen.
Well, and I have somebody been here since the beginning, and there's never been a proposer where the council was actively engaged in what I would call critical issues regarding that proposal that was after debate was ended, or, I mean, just flat that cut off, okay? The questions that need to get asked, okay? I think on proposers that are in multiple phase, if we allow them 10 to 15 minutes, okay? One of the problems we have is if you give everybody 30 minutes and we're way ahead of schedule, then all of our proposers are sitting around all day and they have to be called in because they're not scheduled to testify till late in the day. So we need to have a time schedule that is at least somewhat reflective of the actual time it takes so that these people don't have to be here, you know, all day for a 20-minute presentation. So if we did 10 minutes on a multiple-phase project, and I would ask that staff request or notify those proposers that if they have received multiple appropriations, I would like them to present how much of the first year appropriation is gone, how much of the second year appropriation is gone, and give us a very succinct update as to what they've done with the appropriations from prior years, and they can do that. Some come and say, this is what we did, bang, bang, bang. The others say, well, I really don't have that information. And that doesn't work for me because, to me, efficiency and the expediency of which you're getting the work done is very important. So about 10 minutes or so for a multi-phase project and 20 for a new, knowing that some might run long and some might run short.
Okay.
I would agree with that. The exception is, I think, that the ones that are in their initial phases, 1, 2, and 3, should be given more time. The ones that are 4, 5, and 6, I completely agree, but, you know, when you call it phase 1, you can't call it phase 1, because it isn't even there yet. So phase 2, some of these phase 2 and 3 projects we haven't heard for 3 years or more. So it's almost like a new project, and we have new counselors. So I'd make a distinction there.
Scott, I would just say I think the idea of trying to figure that out makes sense. I think the practicality of knowing which ones will only need 10 minutes is tough. But I think 30 minutes was too much for those, for sure. But I suspect if we went to 20 minutes, some might not fill the 20 minutes, and some are going to drift a little beyond, but we'd be closer to on schedule than if we just give everybody 30 minutes. Because we actually had a problem last year. Sandy was running around calling people saying, we're running out of things to hear, get here 3 hours early. Because staff creates a schedule for everyone to show up and then says show up an hour early, and we were way ahead. So
your the chair's recommendation would be an average then of 20 minutes per proposal. I concur.
I was also going to suggest the average of 20 minutes would work for ones that go long and ones that go short. I think we probably should build in maybe 20-minute breaks or 30-minute breaks about every 3 to 4 hours, which would allow some catch-up time and some running around, especially if we're doing the marathon day, which I would much prefer to just work on 5-hour energy shots all day long than come up a second week.
Is everyone willing to do a marathon? Okay. So chair will work with staff to make 2 marathons for whatever we decide next, which is what proposals we want to actually hear. And we'll try to keep it at 20 minutes. So we might go to 17 if it gets too bad. But thank you for the discussion. The next piece is really for us as a group to discuss what proposals we want to actually bring in for hearing. And we can bring in all or a subset of them. The way I would recommend we handle this is in a motion which is listed on agenda item 9, which the suggested motion is that I move a call of all requests for the hearing. And once that motion is on the table, then to take subsequent amendments to that, asking to withdraw any specific proposal, and then we can have a discussion about whether or not we want to do that. One of the criticisms we had last year was we just set a line and said, if you don't score this much, we're not going to hear. And the criticism was people didn't know why, other than it just didn't score well enough. And I think it would be helpful for our credibility and for the proposers to understand what part of a proposal, if we don't want to hear them all, it was not something that we felt justified us spending the time doing it. Now, that's a change from what we did last year, but it seems like a fairer way to do it. So if someone's willing to make that motion, we handle it that way, or if somebody wants to just discuss doing it a different way, that's fine.
Make the motion.
Okay. We have a motion on the floor. So are there any discussion or proposed amendments to that motion? Ron, you're looking at me like you're confused.
Yes. And that's the correct look.
I only was looking at you, so why don't you explain why you're confused?
Because I don't know what you just said.
Okay. So, as a hypothetical, Ron, you feel very strongly that the RIM WRP partnership, despite being part of our now motion to hear all proposals, that you feel that is a terrible proposal and we should not hear it. You would make a motion to not hear it and explain to the council why you don't think we should hear that, so that the council has an opportunity to understand your perspective and discuss that perspective.
Okay, so at the moment, we intend to hear them all?
That's right.
Okay.
Jane?
I'd like to make an amendment to my proposal, to my motion.
Okay.
I would make the amendment. Is it time to... I can make any amendment I want. Okay. I would like to delete HRE 11 from the hearings.
And tell us what HRE 11 is and why you're making that motion.
Habitat Enhancement in the Soft Lake Watershed. It's a city park of 3 acres. I don't believe it meets the constitutional criteria.
And you want to say any more about that, or?
No, I think everybody's done their homework and they probably understand the project I'm referring to.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would oppose the amendment. I think that the reason given was that it's not constitutional, and I don't know if anybody around this table is a constitutional expert. It's not a decision on the merit of it being to protect prairies, wetlands, forests, or fish game and wildlife habitat. And I think this has come up and it's going to continue to come up to say, well, that should be in the parks, or that should be in the clean water. And there's nothing in the Constitution that says there are barricades between the funds. That there can be a wetland that's restored in a park. There can be clean water stream restoration that's in the WMA. But I think that there are folks who believe that there are restrictions that don't exist. And I think we should hear all the proposals and let them stand or fall on their merits rather than on whether we believe they should be spent out of another fund.
Okay.
Further, this project qualifies for the CPL program. I think that's a more appropriate place for it.
Scott. I have a question about procedure. So a member brings up a proposal to not be heard. Okay.
Right.
Does that then take a roll call vote
yep.
on each and every one of those.
Yep.
Okay? You know, in this particular project, I would support Jane's motion in the fact that when we take a look at what most average restoration costs are, and you look across, you know, anywhere from $1,000 to a high of $4,000 per acre for restoration. I believe this one comes in at, what, $60,000 per acre for restoration. It is so out of the range of all other proposers that I think it is just so cost prohibitive that it doesn't deserve consideration.
I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves because I think that these items are things that we definitely need to discuss at hearing, and when we talk about allocations, what Scott said is definitely important. I was so pleased that we had the rankings and all, and that last year that you folks went and did a cutoff because I thought it's the only clean way to go. Otherwise, we end up with sometimes having just one or two really very, very strong proponents of a proposal or opponents of a proposal swaying the rest of the council. Everybody has had a chance and has done their homework and put out these numbers. I don't see any reason that we couldn't eliminate some of the lower numbers just out of hand, because when we rank them all, when all of us rank them, or the great majority of us rank them low, aren't we really saying no? Because we're saying that they don't meet criteria. When we rank low, some of these are ranking to where if you're getting to 50 or below, you're getting to the point where, you're in the 60s. I should look at my numbers. But, you know, even in schools, if as a teacher, if I was to say to you, well, let's see, you got 65 and 70 is normally passing. Well, I kind of like you. So, no, I think there's a real beauty in numbers when you have 12 people. And you had 12 people saying very definitely, or the great majority saying very definitely, this is not something that meets the criteria. We spent a lot of time on this, and I really do believe that we could go with these numbers. So I speak against the motion. I believe what you did previously, although there may have been critics, I do believe you're going to have critics of this particular motion too, because what is possible is the strong opponent or strong proponent can sway the rest of the council, whereas when we were at home considering this, taking, like I think, 3 or 4 a day and looking at them all 10 criteria, I felt that I took the time and to do a good job, and I know all of you did too. So I could feel comfortable in my numbers.
Okay. Ron, you gave the highest score to this proposal of everybody that scored it. Do you want to talk about why you felt it was a good proposal?
My mind is fogging again. Look at all these. My thought, in part, was I give the benefit of the doubt to almost everybody who makes a proposal. In one sense or another, they're all, the people who make these see value in them. And I didn't think it was a lot of money, as I recall. But I must admit, I did not do my math as Jane has done. So almost all of my scores are pretty close because of the criteria that we set out. And I looked at matching funds would be the biggest decision maker for me and on a higher score. But I really can't tell you.
Okay. So there is a question about, you know, we and I can't remember what's in our call, but I think it has a reference to the $400,000 cutoff, and this particular project came in underneath that. Now, we just talked about park projects, which I think we're going to have a different discussion about because we didn't create that criteria when that proposal was coming in at Metro Parks as individuals. But, you know, this one did come in at $115,000, which is significantly under what our call came for, which I think is a consideration. We actually had specific thing. What we didn't do, which we may do differently, Sue, is instruct staff to say, if the proposal is this, you can automatically reject it. Staff, with this particular one, I know, felt that they didn't have the power to do that because we created criteria and then didn't tell staff that they could do anything with that criteria. So I think we should at least have a discussion about that issue on this proposal because of them not submitting a proposal that met our minimum threshold as per the call. What do people think about that? I think this was the only standalone proposal that came to us that was under the $400,000 threshold in our call.
Mr. Chair?
Yep.
Staff did call the managers and encourage them to withdraw and to submit to the Conservation Partners Agency program and pointed out that the money would be, if they were successful, available sooner, which is the case. They would have access to the money in 6 months instead of whatever, 12 months. And the proposer really wanted to come talk about this project. And we didn't feel at that point that it was our role to say no to it.
Ron?
I just looked at it again. One reason for my high score was a clean water issue, basically a buffer. There are a lot of those lakes in that part of the country are getting green as can be, and they're making an effort, a local effort, to clean up their own lake, which is something I like to see. It wasn't a lot of money, at least totally, and so that's why I gave it a high score. I like projects that attempt to clean up water.
Any other comments or thoughts? We have a motion to remove. Sandy, if you'll do a roll call vote on this.
Bob Anderson?
Question again.
Do we remove this project from our hearing list, or do we, if the motion passes, we won't hear this. If the motion fails, we will hear it.
Yes.
Jim Cox?
Yes.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Senator Ingridson?
Yes.
Jane Kingston?
Yes.
Representative McNamara?
Yes.
Sue Olson? No. Scott Robb?
Yes.
Ron Chera?
No.
Elizabeth Wilkins?
No.
Chair Hartwell?
Yes.
7-4.
Motion passes.
So would you summarize the net effect of the motion?
The net effect is that we would not hear HRE 11, but that would not preclude them from going to the Conservation Partners program.
I would encourage them.
Let the record show that the person who made the motion encouraged them to apply to the Conservation Partners program. You know?
Okay, I'd like to make a motion to remove HAIS-5 invasive species net duplication. I hate the constitutional grounds. I don't understand what the Hansen doesn't like it, but this just does not meet the constitutional mandate of restore, protect, and enhance forest purge, wetlands, so on and so forth. It just doesn't belong in the group. It has nothing to do with the habitat or what we're trying to accomplish.
John?
I concur with Jim. This is, in my estimation, a capital equipment acquisition for for-profit entities. You know, and we've had some of those come before us before, you know, where people wanted us to buy them something because they thought they might be able to go do this or that. But this is a capital acquisition for a for-profit enterprise.
Any other discussion? Rick?
I think there's a value in hearing all the aquatic invasive species proposals.
Okay. Any other discussion? Sandy?
Senator Ingvildson?
Yes.
Jane Kingston?
Yes.
Representative McNamara?
No.
Sue Olson?
No.
Scott Rowe?
Yes.
Ron Shera?
Yes.
Elizabeth Wilkins?
Yes.
Bob Anderson?
Yes.
Jim Cox?
Yes.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Chair Hartwell?
Yes.
So we will not hear HAIS-5.
And do we need a letter to them or letting them know?
I would think it would be a good idea to send a letter to anybody that we don't hear summarizing the discussion so they understand why the council is not interested. Elizabeth?
I believe that the HAIS-1 that is creating an endowment, a chair of the University of Minnesota. I had a great deal of difficulty with this one as far as what the funds are used for. I also feel that we shouldn't be funding an endowment, which is an interest-bearing an account for another really public agency. I would like to see it removed.
And your motion is to do that.
Chair, which one?
HAIS-1. Sue.
I concur with Elizabeth on this one. The funding of an endowment to hire a person off of the interest does not remotely relate to success in any scored areas at all. There's no funds to actually do a project that does anything. This is just putting a body in place, and this is nowhere near what we should be doing.
Okay.
I think there's a value in hearing all the aquatic invasive species proposals.
Any other comment?
Sure.
Yeah.
Just some history. Didn't we talk about creating some kind of a similar program for the SAR-SAMS Ultra Heritage Mining period? And we got a ruling, I think, from our constitutional attorney. At the end of 25 years, we all realized that all of a sudden, boom, our job is done and there's no money. And we even talked about that, but I think it was ruled that we could not do that with sales tax dollars.
I think you're referring to the use of sales tax dollars to fund the perpetual obligation of PILT?
No. This was to set aside X amount of dollars per year and have an ongoing after the 25-year period, well, which would be similar to this. And so I would have to agree that we wouldn't be able to do this.
Mr. Chair, I plan as a staff, and we don't call it... But we trust your
goodness, I haven't been around longer than you guys. Maybe it was just a sentence, too, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, we did have an opinion that came on using sales tax funds, I think even, I don't know if it's an endowment, but if you could use that for a loan fund to fund things. And it was in, when we were dealing with some of these large appropriations, if there was a way of recurring dollars there. I think that's different than an appropriation to the U for endowment, but I think there still are the questions there, which is the reason why we should hear the project, so we can go through those and get those on the record and to find and to have that opinion so that rather than making a decision based on memory, we actually have it in the public domain and it becomes part of the record so that future councils wouldn't have to consider it again.
Out of respect for Professor Sorensen and out of recognition of the enormity of the AIS issue, I don't have a problem hearing it. You can read my comments and scores, but I would be open to a hearing.
Okay. Other comments? Jim?
Well, I think that's a good sentiment, Jane, but you have to remember these people are going to have to come in and give a presentation, and if there's really no real chance of them securing money, I think it's unfair of us to put them through that.
And I would say that's up to him.
I would point out it's not just an endowment, it's also to upgrade lab facilities. Just to clarify, this isn't specifically for just an endowment, it's also for facilities.
David, Denny.
Yep. Go ahead, Denny.
I really feel it's important that we allow ones like this to come in for their 20 minutes. That really shows that we're open to understanding the different parts. And clearly, you know, we can decide and vote individually to say, you know, I only want to fund part of this or not fund any of it. But I think this is really an important emerging issue that affects the habitat in our state, and we should hear a lot about this kind of stuff. And I would feel strongly that we allow these people their 20 minutes. Thank you.
Elizabeth? Yes, we'll do a roll call vote. Sandy?
Representative McNamara.
Yes.
No, you want to say no. Are you clear on that, Denny?
A no vote is a vote to hear this.
A yes vote is to strike them from the hearing list.
But was that clear that I said no, I want to hear them?
Yes, now I hear you.
Thank you.
Sue Olson?
Yes.
Scott Rawl?
Yes.
Ron Shera?
No.
Elizabeth Wilkins?
Yes.
Bob Anderson?
Yes.
Jim Cox?
Yes.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Chair Hartwell?
Yes.
Senator Ingridson?
Yes.
Jane Kingston?
No.
7-4.
All right. We will not be hearing HIS 1. Other? Any other motions? I guess we'll vote on the motion with its amendment. So, just to be clear, the motion is to hear everything except what we have withdrawn through our previous amendments to this motion, which would include the Metro Parks broken out proposal. Sandy, will you go through the ones that were taken off just to clarify for everyone so we know?
HRE 11. HAIS 05. HAIS 01.
Okay.
Will not be heard.
So the motion is to hear all the other ones. All right.
Okay. Representative Hansen?
Yes.
Senator Ingridson?
Bill?
This is for all three of them?
This is for the whole package. Everything except those three that we've reviewed.
Yes.
Jane Kingston?
Yes.
Representative McNamara?
Yes.
Sue Olson?
Yes.
Scott Rawl?
Yes.
Ron Shera?
Yes.
Elizabeth Wilkins?
Yes.
Bob Anderson?
Yes.
Jim Cox?
Yes.
Chair
Hartwell? Yes.
11-0.
All right. Bill just reminded me that we need to confirm
CPL1, CPL2, X1, X2, which were yes-no votes
and they all have seven or more votes to hear. The lowest being contract management, with seven yes votes. So my understanding is, unless otherwise instructed, to schedule these in.
Can we just get a quick motion and make sure that we're on the record for that?
I move to hear. Great.
Any discussion, Sandy?
Representative Hanson.
Yes.
Chair Hatlett.
Yes.
Senator Ingridson.
Yes.
Jane Kingsley.
Yes.
Representative McNamara.
Yes.
Sue Olson.
Yes.
Scott Rall.
Yes.
Ron Shera.
Yes.
Elizabeth Wilkins.
Yes.
Bob Anderson.
Yes.
Jim Cox.
Yes.
Adam Drew.
Great. Thank you for that. We have two things left, opportunity for the public to address the council. I had one tentative public comment. Anyone wish to make a public comment?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Please keep your comments brief, and I would ask that nobody make a comment asking us to make a vote in favor of a specific project. This should be general comments, not comments about specific projects and what we should be directed to do. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the council. I'm Joe Schneider. I'm an executive with Minnesota COLA. We submitted HIS-4 for statewide AIS facilities and equipment. I want to start by thanking you for considering our request. We were very pleased to see that AIS was identified as one of your two priorities in the areas of emphasis for this current round of funding. We assume that means that you want to fund some AIS grant requests in this cycle. In that vein, we look forward to working with you to help you meet that intent. That said, I was very surprised that none of the five AIS grant requests rated high. In fact, they rated at the very bottom of your evaluation. That begs the question as to how well your evaluation criteria lines up with your areas of emphasis and your priorities. It seems like you now have the opportunity to make adjustments in that process to better align your intents with the evaluation criteria. Now, one specific last point, Senator Ingebretson, I was disappointed to see that you evaluated our proposal not on its merits, but your comments would indicate otherwise. Again, thank you for taking the time to consider our request.
Okay. Please.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Kirk Peterson with the law firm of Ransom and Walton, which is the Park and Recreation Board, which, as most of you know, is one of the implementing agencies for the Mid-Coastal Regional Park System. Thank you for taking the time. I wanted to just make a few brief comments on things that I've heard in the past and kind of some of the comments that were submitted today. And I really want to do this in the spirit of improving communication and keeping the lines of communication and understanding open for us. It's been a real learning experience for the Metro Parks system to come here. And I want to just kind of keep going on understanding where you're coming from. We've learned a lot more about what you're expecting from us, and I hope that we can keep informing you on what our expectations are and why we are before you. First of all, I just have three quick points. I'll make it brief. And you kind of already addressed one as far as the umbrella package that we submitted versus the individual recommendations. As you saw, we did both. The reason that we originally submitted an umbrella package is we thought we were being consistent with what other agencies, what other state agencies, what other governmental bodies are doing. For instance, if you look at the WMA proposals, they're all one of the two proposals. there's a big difference between a WMA located up in northeast part of Minnesota, up in Grouse Country, and a WMA located in the Prairie region, south of Pheasant China. But they're all one big proposal. And so we thought we were being consistent, even though some of our habitat proposals that are located in the metro area are different types of things. We do from all of us. But the focus now that we want individual projects, individual solutions, and we can work with that, and we can comply with that. We're happy to have the opportunity, and we appreciate very much the opportunity to make the individual presentations. Secondly, we've heard a kind of criteria that you have concerns because the Met Council or some of the implementing agencies receive other sources of state funds. We get bonded, we get general fund money, we even get LCCMR money. That is not unique to the Met Council. Bowser gets bonded money. DNR gets bonded money. DNR gets O&M money. If you're going to have a criteria along those lines, we hope that it's consistently rated with all, and that we stack up with all of the other state agencies and all of the other groups that are looking for funds. So again, we're just looking for consistency on that. The third and final point is kind of a touchy one. It's more of a philosophical one, and I won't go into a lot of detail on it because there are people that are more versed in it than I am. There's been a lot of comments about we shouldn't even apply for this because we have a separate Parks and Trails fund. The Constitution says that the Parks and Trails Fund can only be used for parks of statewide or regional significance. That is very clearly delineated in the language of the Constitution. State parks are defined in statute. The boundaries for state parks are defined by Minnesota law. Similarly, the metro regional parks, and again, metro regional parks aren't your local potlots. They aren't city parks. These are regional parks that are located in the metro area, things like Minnehaha Falls, Como Park, Baker Park Reserve. These big regional attractions. They are not local parks. Those are defined. You have to meet a criteria. You have to go through a process through the Met Council in order to be considered a regional park in the metro area. There have been comments made that, well, some of the projects and the other things in here are adjacent to state parks or are open space that are located in the metro area. Those cannot apply for Parks and Trails Fund. They do not meet the constitutional criteria of being a part of statewide or regional significance. And so it can't just be something that looks like a park and happens to be located in the metro area. The Constitution is very clear on it. And so I just wanted to make sure that people are aware of that. I know you guys spent a lot of time on the definitions of the Heritage Fund and what the Lasard Sams Council does. Hopefully we can learn more about what the other funds do. And some of the points that you've made have also been very instructive for us. We do need to look more into the Clean Water Fund and how that can be used. We also need to be looking at other sources and how we can integrate ourselves with the other legacy funds as well. And we are doing that. We're interested in doing it. Mr. Chairman, one of the primary things that you learn when you're in my business is you don't be the last person between you speaking and lunch. And so with that, I'll wrap it up. But I appreciate the time.
All right. Thank you. Any other public comments? Sue, you asked for some time.
Thank you. As a transactional lawyer, I am very troubled by gray areas and ambiguity because it leads to disputes. And just this morning, we have heard many people talk about some of the disputes and the gray areas and what things mean. This request comes in three parts, so bear with me. One of the main tenets of statutory construction is the specific overrides the general. In the Constitutional Amendment number 11, the four funds list specific project types for which funds may be spent. I request that legal research be done by a nonpartisan counsel into the legislative history of the constitutional amendment to determine whether those specific fund types result in an exclusivity of those project types to the named funds. Second part, I've been examining the operating procedures of the LSOHC and specifically statute 97A.056. And this examination to me has resulted in two legal questions. First, in statutes, the use of the word and would mean that the items linked with the word and are all required in order to comply with the statute. 97A.056, subdivision 3A, first sentence, discusses the requirements that must be met for any appropriations recommended by this council. The word and is used 5 times in that sentence, yielding potentially inconsistent results. The word or is not used at all. I would request that legal research be done into the legislative history to determine the correct interpretation of the first sentence of 97A.056, subdivision 3A, and specifically to determine whether any of those and words should be or. Finally, circling back again to the argument, the tenet that specific overrides the general, there's also a tenet that the specific inclusion of one thing in a statute necessarily excludes the other things that are not mentioned. This brings me to subdivision 3C in 97A.056. This subsection C allows the council to work jointly with the Clean Water Council to identify projects consistent with the purposes of both the Outdoor Heritage Fund and the Clean Water Fund. However, nowhere in the entirety of 97.056, which establishes the parameters under which the OHC must operate, is there any mention of the other two funds. This lack of mention of the other two funds seems to indicate that the Outdoor Heritage Funds are not an umbrella fund that can be used by any of the other three funds for projects they may deem to be overlapping. The Outdoor Heritage Fund can work with Clean Water on mutually beneficial projects, but the constitutionally specified project types that are available under the other three funds may not be funded with Outdoor Heritage Funds. My third request for a legal opinion is to request legal research into the legislative history to determine whether the exclusion of other funds from 97.056, subdivision C, is meant to indicate that projects which are eligible under the any of the other three funds are statutorily excluded from Outdoor Heritage funding. As part of my motion for these legal opinions, I would suggest that if you need me, I would be the emissary to investigate with the nonpartisan council and ask that they return with a legal opinion to the LSOHC covering interpretation of the questions as I have outlined them above. That's my motion.
Okay. Aren't we glad we have it? We all understand it well. You know, if I were to summarize it, Sue has some legal questions, and she's asking us to ask our nonpartisan staff to weigh in on these questions and give us an opinion, which I think is appropriate to do. So I would urge us to agree to that. And ask Sue to submit that so that staff has it to refer to.
We'll do that.
Having absolutely no idea how long or how in-depth this process is, can somebody give me or the council an indication of how long this process might take? Is this a week, a month, is this months? Well, how long would it take for us to have an answer on this question?
Rick?
Well, I think it's relatively quick because we had days of hearings on this with Representative Murphy's committee initially, and we had legal counsel, nonpartisan research staff, which prepared memos, sat through and listened to all the committee testimony, all the floor testimony on intent. So it should be relatively quick to recover this because it's been looked at in 09 extensively. There were clearly days of public hearings on this, and Mark Shepard is the nonpartisan counsel who did the work. Let's just go upstairs, dusting off the opinions.
Mr. Chair and members, Mark Shepard did do a quite a bit of analysis. There's probably a few habits that are new, and I wouldn't want to guess how much time you need to put together a new memo, but I can't imagine how much you need.
Hey, David, I have just one point to make. Scott asked about an answer. I think it's important to know we're going to get a legal opinion. It's not going to be necessarily what some of us may think of as an answer.
Thank you for that clarification, sir.
So, can we get a...
I would like to know a little bit more of the timeline after the legal opinion is rendered. What the possible routes would be after that point and time frame.
Well, I think it depends completely on what the opinion is.
Well, I think there will be people in favor and of either way. So I think there will be a process that kicks in after that, but maybe not.
And there probably will be, but until we know what they're dealing with to predict what we might need to do going forward, I think it's impossible.
Okay.
Bill?
Thank you. And the big question that sticks out in my mind here is paragraph C of the amendment, or the proposal amendment, I'm sorry, was that it's very clear that there's a question whether we deal with anything other than just the Clean Water Council. Is that the question?
Yes.
In other words, parks, humanities, arts, and all that would be totally out of us.
That would be my interpretation.
Yes. And that's pretty significant, so I... And with regards to the opinion versus attorney's legal notification, we've lived with the Attorney General's opinion on the PILT situation, so I guess we'll have to overcome that when we get to the part of whether an opinion means anything or not. So, because if that's the case, then I'd like to have that reheard as well.
Thinking about the amendment and knowing that the press and other people are concerned about the, well, and I too, I don't want to be getting into substitution and supplanting. That terminology, I think, has been kicked around a lot by various legislative folks and legal folks. And I would like to have some determination as to definitions as to what exactly that means, and some criteria on how do we judge whether we are substituting. What is a process that we can use in order to be able to make that judgment so we're not just offhandedly saying, well, I think that's substitution. Or I think, no, that's not. That's because such and such. There's got to be some criteria that we can set in place that makes sense, and that is legal, so that we don't have to continually address this this question year after year. Is there any way that we can ask legal folks to do something like that? Maybe Sue B. R. Susan, okay. Is there a criteria that it's, Rick says it's already been done. Is there a criteria by which we can measure that whether or not a template of some sort?
Mr. Chairman, members, I do know that Mark Shepard has already looked at the substitution of, and he does have an existing.
Get us that? That would be great. So you may have it, Elizabeth. You'll have something to read. Rick?
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to debate the content of that. Since it was brought up, I think it's important that the council authorizing legislation was passed prior to the amendment, but not as part of the amendment. The amendment statute was passed separately from the council. And when the council legislation was drafted, the only existing entity to cooperate with was the Clean Water Council, because the arts and history is not explicit in terms of who that would go to. It's appropriated. And it wasn't until this year that there was actually an entity created to deal with parks. So there was no one to cooperate with. And I think it's important, I don't want to debate the merit, but I think it's important to have that information so everybody's clear as to what we're talking about, why that.
I assume that's the update to Nell's report.
Sandy, will you call the roll on this motion?
Sue Olson.
Yes.
Scott Rall.
Yes.
Ron Shera.
Yes.
Elizabeth Wilkins.
Yes.
Bob Anderson.
Yes.
Jim Cox.
Yes.
Representative Hansen.
Yes.
Chair Hartwell.
Yes.
Senator Ingridson.
Yes.
Jane Kingston.
Yes.
Representative McNamara.
Yeah.
11-0.
Okay, motion passes. Denny, did you have a comment? You sent me an email saying you had a comment that you wanted to make, Denny.
No, it was old. I'm okay.
Okay. Did not want to ignore you. Jim?
I just want to, the executive director's report kind of got cut off. I just want to ask Bill if he knew where we were on the $7.5 million that we allocated for the barrier. Where is that project? Do you know?
Last I checked in on it, it was still a feasibility study for review by the USACE.
And is there any estimated time when that we'll know what that decision is?
I don't know. There's a representative of DNR here if he's interested.
I'd like to hear from him, I think.
Yeah.
When they want to.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. For the record, Bob Larry, Department of Natural Resources. We've recently had a meeting, kicked off the meetings with Smith Root. Corps of Engineers ourselves were evaluating the proposal right now. They're presenting, they're preparing some documents. We're hopeful that those meetings will be continuing on as a technical kind of advisory type meetings, trying as they develop their proposals. We anticipate construction or documents that can be evaluated sometime in the next, I want to say, 5 to 6 months from Smith Root. At which time the Corps will evaluate. We're looking at construction right now. I want to say at the earliest, if everything went according to plan, which a lot of times don't, I don't know if we'd be able to construct or not at the end of next shipping season. That would be in the best case scenario, assuming that everything went as planned. I know there is some concern still about the safety issues dealing with the sweeping technology that will need to be addressed, but those will be evaluated through the proposal. And I can get, Mr. Chairman, I can get committee members a more succinct timeline with updates and key touch points to you folks as soon as possible.
Mr. Meyer, if they decide to close the Lock and Dam, St. Anthony Lock and Dam, are you going to continue with the project or will that terminate the project?
Mr. Chairman, members, that will be a discussion that we will have to have. There will obviously be a change in the management situation then. So I don't know the answer specifically, but that would be one key point to talk about. Do we need duplication or not?
And just a point of clarification for the rest of the members. This is the electric barrier that was initially sought by the or funded by the council that went to something else and is now back to an electric barrier, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Roy, yes.
And it might be good to add that it included some barriers outside of the metropolitan area.
Mr. Chairman, we have constructed several barriers on the Iowa-Minnesota border that are functional and operational. I think actually Representative Hansen probably has pictures of them on his phone. I know that. So he actually visited the one down there. So we're actively working with Iowa on the protection of our flanks there and looking with South Dakota on what we can do. Not only with barriers, but with management, the transportation, the movement of aquatic life, minnows, bait, fish. So there are a lot of different fronts we're working on at this issue.
And as the status report's completed on this particular project, the six-month status report, we'll get a copy of that.
Jane?
Hi, Bob. This may be an unfair question. You may not know, but I'd like to get a little background at some point. On the tour that we went on July 9th, we were on the overlook looking at Mendota, and there was a representative that said some of our monies had funded tagging and tracking fish. And I wasn't aware of what, where, you know, the derivation of that money is, whether it was our money or not. Maybe he was mistaken. But that was mentioned in our tour.
Ms. Kingston, was the DNR representative who said that?
I'll double check it. That's the first I've heard that you say. Here those things. It was a surprise to me, too, that I brought it up. I will see if I can find out of the team. Maybe. Ron? Mr. Meyer, again, since we're talking about invasive species, this is a question I've been interested in asking for a couple weeks, and maybe you could get back to me or the entire council, but... the rusty crayfish, as you know, is an invasive species, and it's very prominent in the Woman Lake chain. It's also in Leech Lake. I saw it in the Lake of the Woods last week. It's up in Lake Vermilion, etc. And it's very damaging, rusty crayfish. There is a very effective trapper in Woman Lake who asked DNR for a permit to trap in Leech Lake. And he was denied the permit. Which, my question is, why is DNR protecting this invasive species?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Sheriff, we aren't protecting it. There's probably some other circumstances involved with that permit that I will look into and get back to you. Transportation or trapping and harvesting of these types of species is highly regulated just because of the movement.
He has the permit.
So you're saying he was denied a permit?
He has a permit to trap in Woman Lake and other places, but he applied for Leech Lake because of a growing demand to eat rusty crayfish. That's the only good thing about them. They're delicious. And he was denied.
I will check into that and get back.
I would appreciate that.
I just saw on TV a good segment of how to cook them.
We've done it.
Can you bring us some?
I personally can't. Maybe Mr. Sheriff.
Ron, or Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, the question about EIS bonding year, bonding session coming up. I haven't seen any proposals, and maybe you can enlighten the group here when we're talking about EIS, whether the administration's proposals are going to be coming forward, looking at very sizable expenditures on equipment and I guess decontamination units and things like that. I don't remember if you and I discussed this or not, but is there anything on the horizon there or coming with the bonding proposals this year from the administration? I assume there is.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, all of the administrations, actually all of the bonding proposals are on the department or MMB's website now. We can get a link for you to see those if you are interested. DNR Bowser, every agency, local governments are up there. Our proposal, we don't have a specific proposal for decontamination units, so to say. The question will be about what of that would be bondable. There's certain criteria that are involved, 20-year life cycle, things like that. A lot of these AIS units are portable. We are working. You will see our water access sites are now being modified to provide for pull-aside lanes for our units to get in there and do washing, putting in disposal sites for aquatic vegetation and things like that. We're working with areas such as the Green Lake Property Owners Association and the Green Lake area to develop washing areas in particular. There's actually language that was connected to the appropriation this past session that requires us, before we can spend any of our dollars appropriated for water access site improvements, to develop best management practices that will incorporate AIS management into these facilities, which we're preparing and we'll be presenting to the legislature, I'm assuming, once we're back in session. Our timeline is to have those BMPs implemented for the next building season, which will begin in hopefully early next spring. So, to answer your question, we don't have any specific bonding proposals related to decontamination, but we do have requirements to develop best management practices and implement them at our water access sites before we can spend dollars in the future.
Thank you, Bob, for being here to answer a couple. Excellent.
Thank you very much.
Any other things anyone on the council has for us to consider? Ron?
I'm just wondering, I've got some potential conflicts. If we could decide which September meeting, the 2 days we're going to have, if it's going to be 2 days or 1 day. But the current proposal is like 1 day after Labor Day, and half of this council will probably be sleeping after a big long weekend.
Be fully rested.
That's a Labor Day. You can't rest when you're laboring.
Just for the record, the council has 4 days set aside, September 3 and 4th and September 11th and 12th. We've been asked to focus on two of those days and try to get a schedule to cover two. Normally, we would do the 3 and 4 days. We need direction if you want to drop the 3rd and 4th to the 11th and 12th.
Can you send out that little email that we get with the calendar on it? Everybody can punch in which days they can come, and that way we would have the maximum. We could pick the days with the maximum number of members that could come.
Let's do it now.
Yeah, what we don't have is comes and who can't come on the 3rd and 4th? Raise your hands, just by a show of hands.
It's going to be first day of school.
So I have 3. Who can't come on the following week? Well, Denny, do you have any days you can't come since we can't see which hand you raised?
I'm okay with both.
It would seem that we have to go to the 11th and 12th, Sue. I'm sorry. We should check perhaps with Tom's before we make an absolute decision. But for now, we're looking more at the 11th and 12th. And we'll get staff to confirm that by the end of the week. Scott?
11th and 12th are what days of the week?
Wednesday and Thursday.
Is Wednesday and Thursday, is that predicated on something finite, or could it be a Tuesday and Wednesday of that week?
Or a Monday and Tuesday?
No. Tuesday or Wednesday of that week? Does anybody object to Tuesday and Wednesday versus a Wednesday and Thursday? Because that would be better.
Staff will send out a legacy trip. And we'll have to send out a Tuesday. You guys can
help. How about that? We'll see if we can find the days that will work for everybody within that 2 week time frame. We'll ask everybody for what days in those 2 weeks can you make and can't you make. Okay?
Perfect. Thank you.
With the number of presentations, and even, if you have some breaks in there, it may end up that you would end up with 3 days.
We're going to be 2 days.
There you go. You may be spending the night at St. Paul the second day.
You will be.
Yeah.
Okay, so the staff will send out a poll. We'll get to you hopefully tomorrow, but maybe by the beginning of the week. With that, we're adjourned. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.